Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Interpreter Foundation podcast. I'm Terry Hutchinson. My co-hosts are John Gee and John Thompson. Our discussion topic for tonight will be some of the past interpreter articles that have interested us, and also a post on By Common Consent involving happiness in the church, along with some other things. The mission for the Interpreter Foundation is to support the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints through scholarship. We make the latest and best scholarship available to you in podcasts, journal articles, books, seminars, films, and scripture roundtables. We invite you to see what the Interpreter has to offer at interpreterfoundation.org. If you like the podcast, please tell your friends about it. Give us a 5-star rating. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Libsyn, or some other podcast app that you might be using. Now, because the Interpreter Foundation is not owned or controlled by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the comments we make are solely our responsibility. So I also want to point out that the Interpreter Foundation is a 501c3 corporation. Feel free to donate. All of your money will go towards the mission of the foundation, because everybody who works with Interpreter does so on a volunteer basis. And it has been around for 13 years. A couple of weeks ago, we celebrated the 13th anniversary, the 13th birthday party, if you would, something I look forward to every year, because usually I get together with the other Interpreter volunteers and we have a dinner and we find out more about what we've accomplished this year. And the Interpreter has so many fingers in so many pies in a lot of different ways, between podcasts, movies, books, articles. The people here who are with me tonight, John and John, have written books and articles for the Interpreter Foundation, as well as being on the podcast with us. And it's just a great opportunity. And there's even a section on the Interpreter Foundation website where you can check and see how the finances are spent. So you know that pretty much 100% of your donation is going to be used for the good of building the gospel through scholarship through the Interpreter Foundation. So want to encourage you to make a donation in that way. Now, in May, we changed our format. We had a weekly radio broadcast for 2 hours that was then later turned into a podcast, or at least turned into a recording on the website. And in May, the radio station changed the way it does business. And so the Interpreter Foundation went to the current podcast format that we're using. And I actually had a great experience a couple of weeks ago, because one of our listeners tracked me down on the internet with my cell phone. Not my regular office phone or anything else, my cell phone, to find out how and what had happened to the radio broadcast. And so I was able to help him set up, and hopefully he's listening to our podcast now. But it showed me how diligent some people are in terms of getting the scholarship that's promoted by the Interpreter Foundation. And it was quite an accomplishment for him, because he really wasn't very internet savvy when it came to those things. That's why he listened to us on the radio in the first place. But somehow he was anxious enough for the information and the scholarship that we provide through the Interpreter Foundation. And since I think he's subscribed to the journal, and there's a lot of other benefits that he can get. So I appreciated the listeners and all of you listening to the podcast. It's something that I've enjoyed doing for many years now. And I enjoy associating with the brothers I've got on here. And it's like my brother John and my other brother John. But we certainly have a good time doing what we're doing. And so we thought we'd start this evening by talking about some of the recent Interpreter articles and what may have impressed us. We'll go with John Thompson first.
Yeah, I think the one that I was particularly excited about was the article that just dropped from Josh Coates. Josh is the founder of the B.H. Roberts Foundation, and has spent quite a bit of time, several years now, going into the details of what combination of physical features would have possibly made up the plates that Joseph Smith received from Moroni. We've had people, critics who have, said there's no way that the Book of Mormon and the lost manuscript prior to that, that all of that, in addition to the unpublished version, could have fit into a set of plates that Joseph Smith could have even lifted. And so Josh decided he was just going to test the theory, like, because people will say these things that there's no way, but they haven't actually done the homework to figure out if there was a way. And he went into like the possibility of, like, he went through all of the descriptions of the plate that we have in church historical sources, and he lists them all in the article, which is a great resource to have. And then he talked about different plate thicknesses, and what those thicknesses might be, what kinds of metals could the plates be made out of, and he like went through like the weight of them that people talked about when they hefted them, and what if it was gold, what about tin, all these different kinds of things that he went through, and he's it's a I mean, you got to be a mathematician to get through his article because he does a lot of math. But what he concludes, and he, like, what's how big are the characters on the plates? You got to think about that, right? And so he looks at ancient writings on other plates in the ancient world and looks at the sizes of those characters. And then if it's some kind of an Egyptian language, how many characters of an Egyptian language would equal how many characters in English, right? Or Hebrew. And so he kind of went through all this and figured it all out, and came up with, some ranges of possibilities. And the conclusion, I'll just kind of jump to the end here because I just think it's really important that we understand what is plausible. He says that, sorry, means scrolling here. He's got a lot of appendixes or appendices, so I'm just trying to get through all those. He says, based on the most plausible configurations, the study suggests that the following likely characteristics existed for the plates. The plates likely contained less than 20% gold. We've kind of assumed that just because of the weight. If it was pure gold, it would have been way heavier. The total weight of the plates would have been around 54 pounds. The number of plates would range from about 187 to 259. And this included the sealed portion. So the total number of plates could have been around 200. And that's still sufficient to get the complete Book of Mormon that we currently have, as well as the lost manuscript, as well as translated sealed portion. And so he was able to show and demonstrate that this is very plausible based on ancient writings on ancient plates and how they kind of show up. And again, using Egyptian versus a Hebrew or English, the English equivalent. The dimensions of the plates were slightly smaller than Joseph Smith's description, but about 10% of his estimate. The engraved characters in the plates would have been around 5 millimeters square. Each character of Reformed Egyptian likely represented around three English characters, similar to the density of Demotic. And so that's his conclusion. So he very well demonstrates that the gold plates that Joseph Smith received could have contained the entire Book of Mormon, the entire missing manuscript, lost manuscript, and the entire untranslated portion in about 200 plates. So I just thought that was a really brilliant article. It's like I said, it's been a long time coming. A lot of work went into this, and it's finally here. So it's great to have.
It sure looks like it's been a lot of work. When I see articles like this, I think, how in the world do we find the peer reviews for this? Because I wouldn't even know where to start. But I love the comments after the article, because there's a back and forth between Josh and several people, Jerry Grover. One of them stood out for me. It's by a guy named Ken Wick. And he says, thank you for your article. I'm currently writing a book on physical properties of the Book of Mormon plates per witness accounts, of which there's 81 total. Just a fascinating back and forth just based at the tail end of the article. So once again, for those of you who are listening and for the caller that tracked me down, I said, do you subscribe to the journal? He said, no. I said, well, go to the website, put in your email, subscribe to the journal. You'll get this in your inbox every week and it's free. Every week and it's free. And we were at the birthday recently. What were we up to? 680 weeks or something like that without a break. And we've got a backlog now of several months. So
long time.
And you two have published with the journal. I have not, but everybody says it's quite a rigorous process. Some have described it as arduous, but simply because of all the peer reviews and other things. So that's great. That's a good article. One that I really liked was by Kent Jackson, and
that's a good one.
It was a response to an article by Colby Townsend, which he published in the Journal of the Bible and Its Reception. And it's called Early 19th Century Biblical Scholarship and the Production of the Book of Mormon, in which he claims that several of the passages in the Book of Mormon about Isaiah, several of the Isaiah passages are different than the King James Version, but that Joseph allegedly looks like he did a lot of copying or transcribing from Adam Clark's Bible commentary, which was published and available to Joseph at the time. I know that there are others who have the theory that Joseph did a lot of the Joseph Smith translation from Adam Clark's work.
Ken Jackson also dealt with that issue too.
Yep.
Yeah. So
Ken Jackson's
anyway,
the man when it comes to Adam Clark claims.
Well, he's the man right now when it comes to the Joseph Smith translation. Let's face it. I mean, for a long time, it was Robert Matthews. I think it's safe to say that Kent Jackson has picked up his mantle.
Yeah. I mean, the part of the issue here is Adam Clark's Bible commentary was available in the sense that it was around. Whether it was available to Joseph Smith, we have no instances where he refers to it, other than these purported places where they claim he's used it. And Ken Jackson, if Joseph Smith did use Adam Clark, Ken Jackson has no problem saying that. He just doesn't find any evidence of it.
And he specifically talks about how the evidence that Colby uses is exaggerated or misused in various fashions and gives examples in the article. So I found that was pretty, pretty interesting. There's also some examples of that in New Testament. One of our professors in the New Testament has claimed that Adam Clark's commentary was used for that too. Right, John?
Well, that's less clear. One of his students has claimed that.
Oh, it was the student. Okay.
It was the student who made the claims. It's
he put his name on it on the paper, though.
he put his name on one version of the paper, but I'm not quite sure where he personally stands.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, that was a fascinating article. There was an article about the shape of the Liahona. And I mean, you never know what's going to pop into your inbox on a Friday from the Interpreter Journal. We'll put it that way. So we do appreciate and enjoy the journal articles as they come out. So was there anything else in the journal that stuck out in either of your minds before we move on to another topic?
Not.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Okay. All right. So in our show prep, I had Let's see. In our show prep, I had, let me find it here on the computer, referenced a link to you for an article called Are Latter-day Saints Happier? Did you ask Leah or Luke?
Well, I have to admit, and when we did the show prep, I hadn't followed the link. Because the link you sent the link on the phone, and I was looking up on the computer. And I actually, the one I found was the
Oh,
article
it's the one
that
original one from
the
Times
original
and Seasons.
article, which
Times and
is has the
Seasons, yes.
same title, and went through that one. And it's
Okay.
different from the response. So
Yeah.
let's set this up. There was
Yeah.
originally an article examining Pew Research on whether Latter-day Saints are happier, and they compared four control groups. They compared converts and lifelong members, former members, and the general population. And the original article concluded that Latter-day Saints are happier in general. They presented a much more nuanced picture. And then there was a response article to that argued that no, we're not happier, and that it, particularly women are less happy.
Yeah, that's right. I stand corrected.
So I misunderstood it the first time, and so some of the things we talked about in the show prep apply to the original article, and you were talking about the response. So that's the setup.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the original article first and foremost.
For original article is done by somebody with some decent chops on the statistics and the sociology. They know what they're doing. Both of these articles are semi-anonymously written, meaning that they both of them go under pseudonyms. And so I'm not, I know the author of the original article. He knows what he's doing. I'm not convinced, or I'm not as sure about the article of the author of the responding
Right.
article, and I don't know that he has the same competence in the field. There are lots of people who you get into these things and they really like to dispute them. They have a particular narrative that they're pushing. And you can see this in some of the sociological journals. I've seen articles where one of the longtime replicated over and over again sociological results is that people who live together before marriage have a higher divorce rate.
Okay.
And oftentimes suffer other problems as well. And that runs against the grain of the prevailing sociological narrative, and people are always trying to refute this well-reproduced result. And in some cases, they'll fudge the math and everything else to get it to say what they want to say. And this is a long documented problem in sociology. There's a nice book by Christian Smith, published by Oxford, called The Sacred Project of American Sociology, and where he talks about the problems that they have in the field, where some cases people will make up stuff or use stuff that they has been refuted and still put that out there because it supports a project that they have of how they want society to be rather than how it actually is. And the response article definitely has an agenda.
John Thompson, you had a little bit of a different approach to these articles. You kind of liked the comment section. Looks like.
Oh, well, I just had some questions about the last response article. I think that, and I think some of the people in the comments had similar questions. And so I perfectly honest, I'm not a statistician, and so I was not able to really get into the details too much. But you know, we have the charts from Pew, and then we have the charts that were changed by the last response article to kind of provide some different perspectives. And looking at the charts, the purpose of the response article was to say that women particularly were not faring as well as men when it comes to the happiness aspects. And that can be seen actually in the Pew charts. You know, the women are not saying that they're very happy overall, except for in the case of lifelong members. They seem to, in some cases, say that they're very happy more than men do. And so, but anyway, the point that the response article was trying to say was that really women are not any more happy in the church versus someone who's never been LDS. So whether you're a convert or a lifelong member, they were saying that that women were not reporting themselves being very happy more than someone who's never been LDS. We're ignoring at this point those who were members and then left, so ex-LDS, where they're actually very below the happiness quotient, or the average, I should say. But I think that what I found interesting was that some people were saying, well, wait a minute, because when you look at the lifelong LDS, it actually they're 10% higher in saying that they're very happy compared to someone who's never been LDS. Of women, right? Just women alone are 10% higher. So why is that not significant, right? Because they're kind of claiming that there's no significant difference. But I think the author responded to say that, well, because it's such a small number of reporting, you know, LDS people reporting to this survey, that you have a large, you know, percentage of derivation. What's the word I'm thinking of where it may not be accurate? You have the
But
my mind just went blank. But
you're
that they
the
were
young
saying
one
that
from us. You can't do that, John.
that's yeah. But they're just saying that the 6% you know is within the range of error. And
6%
so
of them are in the range of error in a poll. Most national polls are striving for a 2 to 3%
right.
range of error. If they're saying claiming it is 6%, Pew usually wouldn't want to release something with the error rate that large.
Right.
Well, I
And so
think
they're
it's
claiming
also
that
based
that,
on the sample size, right? I mean, the
yeah,
smaller your sample size, the greater the plus minus
greater
on your
than
error.
exactly. And so they're making the claim that the 10% difference, you can't really say it's that big of a difference because of the error rate. And so anyway, I don't know. It wasn't very convincing to me. I can see that obviously someone who's a convert to LDS is very similar to someone who's never been LDS as far as claiming that they're very happy, at least among women. For men, it's off the charts, right? Men are saying they're very happy more so when they're converts to LDS, Latter-day Saint. The church versus never Latter-day Saint. Anyway, so I'm withholding any kind of judgment at this point because I just don't know the details enough to But just based on the charts, it seems like it's a little disingenuous to say that women are the same, whether they're in the church or out of the church when it comes to happiness, just based on the chart.
Well, I think there's, it's interesting because we also get news reports that talk about how unhappy men are, particularly young men at the present time. So one of the things that you could take away from this is that the gospel for at least that group where they where
Nationally, they come out low.
where they naturally are coming out low at this time, that this people when they talk to these younger men, they talk about hopelessness and feel like society is oppressing them, and they give lots of reasons why they're unhappy. And so I would think that this has one way to read the results would be to say that the gospel makes that group, which has been particularly unhappy, much happier. And some of the other groups may not see as much of a contrast because they tend to be happier in general and don't feel that sort of drag on them. But that's the one of the problems when you get this data is how do you interpret it? And what I see is that the author of the original article was interpreting a positive way, which the author of the respondent article really didn't like.
Well, it was really interesting because the very first comment out of the gate in the response article says it would be useful if Stephen C. could respond, but the website BCC has banned him from commenting, which is interesting. Now, I've had experiences occasionally commenting on both websites, really positive on the one on the BCC. I have to confess, occasionally I've run into some challenges in terms of response and everything. And I'm not a person who gets involved in internet fights. I just don't have enough time. It just doesn't go anywhere. It reminds me of the little cartoon where a guy's sitting at his computer at night and off panel, the wife says, "Hey, are you coming to bed?" He goes, "Just a minute, I can't. Someone is wrong on the internet." And it makes me think, gosh, I need to tone it down a bit. But anyway.
Well, it's it sucks people in, and most of the time I'm finding more and more that I have some sources I look at and I'm less and not really interested in the fights,
No.
because there's so much heat and so little light.
Yeah, and political stuff. I mean, I did talk radio for a long time, and I enjoy it, but it does take it out of you. I haven't done that for a long time, and I've tried to stay away. I see scholars who I admire. I appreciate their work. Even fellow interpreter scholars whose politics are far different than mine, who are a little more aggressive about their political stances, and I just prefer to be silent. So, anyway, want to thank you. Is either of you got anything coming up in the next month until we get together that you ha are planning that you can talk about?
There's the key caveat.
Ah, okay. John, what have you got going on?
That I can talk about,
Yeah.
classes are going to be starting.
Oh, okay. Are you teaching Coptic this semester?
No, I'm teaching Ugaritic and Late Egyptian.
Okay. How about you, John? The other John.
Writing some commentary on Abraham, mainly. That's kind of consuming most of my time, and then just keeping up with things at Scripture Central.
That's right. Okay, good. Well, hopefully next month we'll have a great show and a very interesting guest who will announce at the time, because we haven't quite set that up yet, but I'm about 90% sure we're going to be able to do something with that. So we want to thank you for listening to this version of the podcast. This is it for myself, Terry Hutchinson, as well as John Gee and John Thompson. Thank you for listening. Please stay tuned and join us again for Interpreter Foundation Podcast.